This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goyim. Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goyim. Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goyim. Joel.
I'm on fire escape with my
Tony
brother.
Shalhoub.
We're smoking. Don't say Astrid. No. Bang to Paris.
Penny Pan. Is there such a thing as General So? Was he a person? I don't know.
Wow, Kevin.
Was he?
Did you prepare that?
He was. He was a person.
He
no, I didn't prepare.
He thinks he's...
I stayed up all night preparing that sweet-ass General
So. He thinks he's a person.
What, General So?
Yeah.
I mean, he does, because he was.
He was inhuman.
Was wow. he? I mean, he's delicious, one way or the other. Don't get around that. Welcome to the marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goyim. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Alice.
And we're the Maisel Goyim. Hey, we're here. We're doing it.
We're doing it, despite...
Episode 6, despite my illness.
My illness.
If you can't tell, I'm very under the weather right now.
I didn't realize how much it would play, but I can hear it in my voice that I'm sick.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Like, if I... Right? You can't hear it?
I don't think I would. I would just think.
Well, I wouldn't do a concert.
No, right you now. Would not. No.
I'd Lady Gaga this show.
But if I was a listener, I would just say Alice seems a little annoyed with Kevin. I wouldn't say she's sick.
Yeah, that's what you'd say.
See, and I
everybody has the same insecurities that just you have.
That just you have. Oh boy. Episode 6. Other than the illness, you doing all right? Miss Wireland, you doing okay?
Huh.
You doing good?
Am I in trouble?
No.
I'm doing great.
Do you think I want to get you in trouble? You always say, am I in trouble? I'm not the authority figure here.
Yeah, you are.
The listeners are the authority figure.
No, they're not. I want them to know that first and foremost. You're not the judge of me, all right? You listeners.
I mean, they literally are.
You might have had it easy.
They literally are.
You had it easy with Demi. Guess what? New sheriff in town. All right. You don't judge me. You don't at me on Twitter. You don't take
this is like
liberties.
This is like when Dad remarries, and this is your speech to the children.
All right. You maybe thought that I was gonna come in here and try to prove myself to you, and make things you know fun. New dad's fun. Guess what?
New dad's not.
New
fun.
Dad's not fun. New dad mostly has.
New dad's here to kill you.
New dad's on Dayquil.
Okay.
Anyway.
I'm doing good, too. Let's introduce our guest.
I did ask you.
Oh, what did
you
I talk
it.
Over you?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Sure did.
I'm sorry. We're friends. I love you.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen, she's an old friend from the extended Gilmore Guys universe. She's a writer on Speechless. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Carrie Rosen.
Carrie Rosen, welcome
you.
To the... Maisel Pod Studio.
It is a true honor to be back. I never knew it could happen, and then Amy made more content for us. And
I never knew it could happen, too. Really, it is just like a good excuse.
We've really
to keep
lost control of this
people.
Whole thing.
I mean,
she's gonna keep making more stuff.
What if she just stops because she's like, you know what, Kevin, you need a break.
That's right.
Take a tin.
Yeah,
I could see her spitefully stopping work to. Like, just stick it to millennials. Like, I don't want to make stuff for them
That's
anymore.
Funny.
Sure. Now, Carrie, before we got on mic, we were talking about some information that you might have, some scoop, some news.
Oh, I do have a bombshell to drop that I was going to wait for it to come up organically.
Oh, okay.
But it's okay. Oh, I asked Bailey.
Everything's organic.
Yeah. This was organic.
At Maisel Pod Studios.
I think so. Maisel Pod
Something
Studios.
I found interesting that Bailey told me.
Sure. And this is like...
You know, my friend Bailey,
your
who's
friend
on the
Bailey
show.
DeYoung, who plays Imogen on the show.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she was originally cast as Penny Pan.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And she... They weren't finding an Imogen, and they got to the table read, and she performed it for them at the Regis as a favor, and they liked her read it, and just gave her that part.
Wow.
She got a new penny.
Classic Hollywood story.
Which really blows your mind and or makes you realize that there was no plan. Because I...
yeah.
Because yeah, it's so two drastic ways to go with that character. Because the way it is now, you feel like she's, you know, off-brand Midge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like she looks like the boy version of her.
Yeah.
But Bailey obviously would have been the complete opposite direction.
Sure. Oh, my gosh. There really was no
plan. And you also just imagine, of course, she's going to be the best friend because she's Universe and she's from Bunheads and
she's all our best friend.
She's all our best friend. So
she's literally your
best
friend.
She's Ginny. Yeah. Best friend.
From the block. Ginny from the bun.
Interesting.
Wow.
She would have been a good Penny Pan, though.
You know, Scott Patterson originally was going to be...
He was going to be Imogen. That's what went so wrong.
He was going to be Imogen. And then also at the table read for Gilmore, he was going to be Richard Gilmore.
Oh,
but then he read for Luke because the guy they got...
I heard he was going to be Dean.
Yeah, he was originally...
Originally it was going to be a club situation with Scott Patterson in every role.
Originally he was going to be Dean and it was going to be written and directed by Woody Allen.
Uh-huh.
But then WB went a different way. That's
the Gilmore Girls was not even. It was written by Amy Sherman-Palladino. They had just hired Woody Allen to direct it.
Oh no!
Now, Carrie, how did you? I mean, you watched the show because you're an ASP fan.
Mm-hmm.
Did you love it? Did you like it? Were you okay?
I'm gonna put myself somewhere between like and love.
Okay.
I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I am not as over the moon about it as some people are.
The Golden Globes,
yeah.
The Hollywood Foreign Press.
Here's my thing. I wish every episode was 10 minutes shorter.
Wow.
Ooh, okay.
Shots fired across the bow.
Yeah, yeah.
Carrie Rosen,
I said it.
Coming in strong.
I said it.
And too many shots in every episode.
Hilarious. Kevin,
don't do this to me. Don't do this to me.
You're already on fucking fire.
So the pace of it is something that
I binged it in maybe three sittings.
Uh-huh.
But I found like clockwork every episode.
Checking
if I was
your watch.
Getting restless, I'd check how much is left, and it's always about 10 minutes. And you know, I think time constraints are really Amy's friend. Like, I know we're happy for her that she has this kind of unrestricted medium.
We're happy for her. Like, we are a friend.
No, I do feel like I have more of a personal relationship with her than any other showrunner, just because.
For sure.
I guess the ones I work for.
More so than David E.
Right.
Kelly.
Yeah, but, you know, I feel like I really get her because her personality is so out there in everything she does. And, I think she really needs, like, I get nervous sweats thinking about what if Gilmore Girls hadn't had time restrictions.
Yeah. Do you ever get nervous sweats thinking about if it was a half-hour show instead of an hour-long show?
I think that would be good.
I think it might have been great.
Like,
the more I think about it.
Yeah, yeah. My friend and I were joking about today.
I'm going to comment on everything you guys are saying.
Okay.
1 minute after you finish talking about it. That's what's going to happen.
That's good.
With my cold meds, I'm realizing. Like, I'm hearing it, and I'm digesting it, and then I'm, like, thinking of a thought, and it's going to happen, but you're already going to be on something else.
No, but that's good. It'll be like you're a time traveler who's bad at his job.
Yeah.
Or her job.
Well, aren't all time travelers, like, the first thing they do is they get in and they're like, somebody give me a tutorial on this era or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, ugh, somebody has to train this guy.
Yeah.
Train the new guy.
Train the new guy over here.
Well, I did watch the episode. See, this is just out of context. Nobody asked me anything. Nobody asked me anything about anything.
See, you looped forward in that moment.
Alice, did you watch the episode?
There it is!
Oh my god! I'm forward. I'm ahead. This is so crazy. Okay.
Now we're all caught up.
No, I didn't like it.
You didn't? Oh, you didn't like the episode?
No, you were talking about something specific.
Oh, okay.
See, in the future. Everyone's confused.
Did you like the president's comments the other day?
That's what happened. Amazing with the president's comments.
Now,
what are the chances that you could guess that she wouldn't like something the president said?
This is the thing. This is why we're in a crazy time loop.
So specific.
Yeah. Wow.
So, Carrie, how did the depiction of Jewish culture on the show resonate with you?
Yeah.
It felt real to me. I wouldn't call myself incredibly Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I would, but like, I wouldn't be correct. Because I'm very...
It's not what other people say.
I feel very culturally Jewish, which is what we all say when we don't go to temple.
Sure.
You know, like, my grandparents were in the garment industry. Like,
literally.
That part of it, like, when they go to that factory, I was like, cool, I guess that's what work looked like for Grandpa Bob.
For Grandpa Bob.
You know, like a lot of the cultural stuff felt very authentic to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never went to temple and I didn't have a bat mitzvah, so like I don't really connect with that part as much.
Mm-hmm.
But they were, they're certainly Jews.
But like your Grandpa Bob, for instance, went to temple and everybody at that in that time period, maybe.
They would do like the obligatory Yom Kippur,
yeah.
having bar mitzvahs.
Yeah.
But for that, it was most about like having a bar mitzvah at the country club and all your friends were there. It was
amazing.
Not at all about the like experience.
I like that. I love that about Jewish culture, that you can have this like very obligatory feelings towards your actual like religious obligations.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah. And I wish I felt that more.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, here we go. Gotta do this. But it's like the sacred place.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my sister and I, like, we were in Hebrew school when we were like 6 and 7. And my brother was disabled. So, like, that really gave my parents an out of like doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be like, this is hard for us. It was, you know, maybe 30% harder. But, like, when we were 6 and 7, they put us in the position of like, we can keep going to this if it's very important to you. And
whoa, wow.
And we were 6 and 7, so we're like, no.
Yeah.
So
it's hard to prioritize it.
So, you know, and obviously I didn't come on here to like drag my parents, even though I'm glad I am. at that fork in the road, I wish we could have kept going to temple for like the obligatory
uh-huh.
stuff, because that's kind of what I miss.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Of course.
But you know, when Yom Kippur comes around, like we all make a joke of I'm fasting between meals, and like that's the tradition. So we have our things.
I love it.
No two families are alike.
No, that's
the thing important to remember.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, compare me with your last Rosen guest from last week.
Yeah.
I know. I did not have to change that many letters on the board.
That's what this is. The guest is about. He doesn't like changing the letters.
Yeah.
It's actually really hard to
pop. So next time,
out.
Get a Carrie and then just keep going. Yeah. And
Yeah, we're going to book a Carrie.
Carrie Mosen is actually coming in next week.
Oh, that's going to be delightful. Yeah.
We're going to book fictional guest Carrie Bradshaw for episode 7.
I love Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, so sue me.
Is that That's what scary. She says?
No, it's okay. It's like, this is an outfit.
That feels more.
I could see her wearing everything Midge wears, though. But
absolutely.
Like,
the Dior
from
this episode. I was like,
and that shrug.
I don't live here anymore. That's my best.
Okay. Well,
and then I fall asleep for 12 minutes.
Did you watch the episode, Alice?
Of course. Oh my god, oh I get it. It's a callback. It's
folks,
a tailback.
This is episode 6. This is Mrs. X at the Gaslight, which is a very cool title. It was written by Sheila Lawrence, directed by Scott Ellis. The only ep not
That's
written
crazy.
By one of the Paladinos.
With no Paladino to its name.
The only one this season.
Why?
Sheila was a mainstay from Bunheads as well as Gilmore. Uh-huh. And they wanted her help.
Uh-huh.
They needed her help.
Uh-huh.
One of the only other writers that worked on the show. And the Amazon synopsis is, Mitch finds a different kind of audience to perform for, much to Susie's chagrin. Abe gets offered the experience of a lifetime. The Weissmans come together for a family dinner. Susie finally shows off her management skills. Whoa. That feels like a little shade at the end. Susie finally shows up.
Is that like buying a phone?
Yeah, she's... I think it's like... No, it's the probably the confrontation at WME. But I think the best way to get into this discussion, as usual, is for a little segment we call...
12 o'clock, rock, we're going to
pop
around
the culture
tonight.
I should change that. I should change
Why?
It.
Why?
I don't think
that was great.
Why?
It feels a little stale.
We're in episode 6.
It's did 6 times.
Yeah, this is just like.
I think I've only done 5 because we didn't have one for the first time.
It's that like Simpsons joke where you just have to repeat it enough times and it'll work.
This is our rake.
I like it now. I finally like it for the first time.
Today's the first time.
Today's the first time.
Did you ever feel that way about Pop Goes the Culture? Was there a moment where you said, we need to not do this, and then you stuck with it and it paid off in huge dividends?
Good question.
You're right.
Dividends.
Oh, boy. We're taking every pop culture reference in the episode, put them in a supercut. This is 6. Mrs. X at the Gaslight.
I didn't cut the lines. Just wanted to sound like I was in a Bogart picture for a second. It was kind
of
cool.
Like Sasha from Edge of Night.
Hey, Jack Webb.
I want no part of Sputnik Panic.
Who knows? We may be the next Nichols and May.
Well, that's it.
I was just getting settled in.
Well, I know.
Me too.
Well, I mean, half of them were them just saying the words Nichols and May. Nichols and May. Nichols and May.
So Nichols and that's May. Right. They kept saying Nichols and May. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this episode, unfortunately, it sucks that I'm sick because this episode, I think, might have been one of my top episodes. Like, probably was maybe number one or two.
Same. I think the strongest one since the pilot, which is all the more hilarious given that one of the Paladinos did not write it or didn't have credit on it.
Yeah.
So, I'm interested in that because this had that, you know, remember, and you watched A Year in the Life, right, Carrie?
Sure did.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then. this is an outfit. I'm just going to keep saying that until I'm respected by my... I love you. So there's just this tone that is like really weird awkwardness that permeates all of A Year in the Life where it's not clipping along as easily as a Gilmore episode. It's just sort of everybody's like not really connecting to each other, and there's a lot of moments of like, where is this character what is this character thinking? And then it just kind of exists that way for a really long time because we touch base with another character. And I felt like this show does that and works with that tone properly. Like, it uses it the right way. Like, you might, like, it's really cinematic, and the tension that exists is like the right amount of tension for the right amount of time. You know what I mean? Like, the whole thing with Midge in the beginning at the parties, how it's like, you know, it's like everybody's
picked up a newspaper, and there on the front page is a headline. Wall Street Golden Boy, Manafort McLean, caught with head of wife
Midge
in
Maisel,
trunk
Manafort
of
McLean?
Car. That's right. Manafort murdered his wife, then drove around with her head for an hour before getting caught. I couldn't believe it. It had to be some other Manafort McLean, but there he was, in the paper, handcuffed, being perp-walked into the station, and I just thought, my God, he still looks fantastic.
Okay.
Killing, you know? And you watch that, and you're like, everybody's having a great time. It should be a convivial, fun party mood, but it's so not. It's just shitty. You know what I mean? Like, it's just depressing and
you found
weird.
It even in that first scene to be shitty.
Oh, absolutely. I was like, this is, something is off. Like, this person has given up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, when you see the person who's like a, halfway through the movie, who's like, you know, a superhero, and then they just become a waiter.
Yeah, remember that scene where Thor's like, welcome to Denny's, can I take your order?
It always sounds like I'm pitching my own movie, and I make that example.
No, but
you know what? I think... That's when Buffy is a waitress.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
That's exactly right.
That's why you're here.
That's
the only reason.
Did you just feel like
she
earned her spot?
Thank you so much for being here. We do have to see. We do have to check in with Carrie Mosin.
She wouldn't have known that.
It's an outfit. No, I get
when
that.
When you're tired, you take a Napa.
Where this is like wrong. It's like seeing Rory drop out of Yale. Why would she drop out of Yale? It's the same thing where it's like, this isn't where you belong. We know this is temporary and especially driven home.
Yeah.
By Susie being at the party and just looking like, what is this bullshit? What are you doing?
And it's like every episode we talk about how Susie and is such an incredible character. And then this episode, it's like we keep complimenting her and being like, how could she outdo herself? And now this episode is just like, oh my God, I can't believe how much I love her.
This felt like the most... This is exactly who I wanted Susie to be.
Me too.
Where it's like they stumbled with it, or I feel like it wasn't exactly
when
what
Dan
I wanted.
Dan was writing for
one
her.
Of those Daniel episodes where she's like, I'm nervous all the time.
Right.
It's like, is this really her? That Rose would just like make her shook all of a sudden. But this is like she's confident, she's secure. And I love little touches. Do you feel like she wasn't that secure?
Susie?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she was secure.
Really?
Well, I felt she was. What frustrated me about Susie in this episode was, like, there were a lot of moments where she was saying she was doing what was right for Midge, but it was transparently more about herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I also was curious, and I was especially excited to talk to you about this episode in general as, like, a comedian and performer, which I am not. And, like, there are things that I feel like I might have connected to more if I were.
But, oh my God, I'm so glad you're here. Because I'm so glad
no
you
one ever
this
asked me these things.
Because I had something I think you're going to dig into. So, okay.
Excellent.
Keep going.
I was confused. So, like, Randall says he has an agent and a manager.
Yeah.
This is Nate Cordry at the party. They start doing, little they do like two-man improv,
and
like
that,
mono
yeah,
scenes.
It's so much worse, where it's like clearly a pre-written sketch where he has his lines that he gets to say, and yeah. she's just doing it with him.
Yeah,
that was the one part about this episode that was confusing.
No, I just have one of those punums.
What's your name?
My name, well, it's A. Roth. Is that the first name? Yeah, well, that's it. Not very common.
A. Roth. And your last name?
Hitler. Berg.
It's so written. It doesn't feel like what improv
feels like. It's terrible. I mean, it can't be improv.
Well, you feel like he walked into a bunch of parties saying that, and finally someone took the bait.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's like, just been bombing party after party after party.
And then with Midge, he's like, I can't let her go.
She's the one person who's gotten
the one person who indulged me.
I was watching it like Susie, and I was like, yeah. What the fuck is this shit? And then like afterwards, when they said, hey, nice to meet you, I was like, what? No way.
Oh, that they hadn't met before.
That's bullshit. Okay. Like, that is just so, like, there's no awkwardness whatsoever between, she's just like, well, hello, what's your name?
There's no sense of discovering.
Yeah.
You don't get a sense of discovering those scenes, which they could have played, like, oh, they're getting to know each other's styles, and
yeah.
he activates something in Midge, but it's just like, she just kind of, like, walks on stage and does the pre-written
weird.
Scene with him.
Yeah, it's just strange.
I've watched this episode 3 times now, wow. and because I watched it in my first run, and then I watched it twice in preparation for this because I want to come to play.
Yes.
Oh, and, I love you.
And the first time I was a lot more into the two of them as a thing, and I think it was just in anticipation of what I thought the story was going to be, which is like, to me, the very real thing of like bit romance, like comedy boys that don't really know how to like connect that way. And it's all, I know that was in college for me, a lot of like, if I liked a guy, we would do funny bits together.
And
yes, and I love you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's so
a perfect rom-com idea, Kevin.
Oh. Wait a minute. I'll be right back, you guys.
Chris Gethard already is making it.
That sounds right.
And so, like, I thought it was going to be fun to see Midge kind of be like, what's his deal? Like, why is he always doing bits with me? And I'm sad that story was completely in my head. I liked their thing more when I thought there was potential for it.
I had
it.
That the first time I watched it, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same. And watching it 2 more times, knowing, I guess it's a spoiler that we don't see him again. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, viewers.
Farewell, Randall.
Yeah.
That's a series. That's a wrap.
Not necessarily. Because
well, maybe
we have
season 2 or 3, even.
And I think it's like.
6. Season 6.
I have so much to say about that because I feel like, in a lot of ways, Randall is another Joel. Like, he's not great on his own. Like, Randall obviously needs a Midge to complete his.
He's better than Joel on his own.
Yeah,
as a comedian.
Like, he's like,
we don't know
Joel,
what he is as a man.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair.
And he's like, if Joel kept trying or something, you know, it's like he just isn't star quality and Midge is. And if Midge goes along with him, she will be tempering herself and like putting herself in a box, you know, especially for the time period, you know. I read it as like, this is just lame. I was very on Susie's side when she was like, what the fuck, you know.
But I did kind of feel like, I know in modern day, like I come from a school of like when you're starting out, if someone will pay you to do what you want to do,
right,
that's better than being paid to
Absolutely.
Do something else.
Yeah.
So I was kind of confused, and as I was excited to talk to you guys about, like how much of a betrayal would it really have been to be a duo with this guy?
Yeah.
Like if she can make a little side money doing that and still doing stuff, would have that have been so wrong?
Yeah, but I think for the purposes of telling the story of Midge Maisel, like, it wouldn't work, but in reality, that would be a path.
Yeah.
You'd spend 6 months and a year or something. Because truly, like, the first jobs you get aren't like, I'm on The Tonight Show.
But this is where I felt Susie was a little self-serving because, like, you know, Randall said he had an agent and a manager. And so I know she was so worried about this agent stealing Midge, but they could have both existed. And I know, like, if these were friends of mine today, I would have been like, oh, great, Susie, you're an aspiring manager. Like, if you get this great client for this agent, he has your name. Maybe this is a way to get yourself out there.
That's true.
And I think Susie being, like, so obsessed with keeping Midge, like, we're a pair, it's just the two of us. Like, not really expressing any interest in, like, more clients. Like, it seemed like she was holding Midge too close, and it wasn't really for the best for either of them.
Right. And with his agent too, I have this weird thing on the show now where I'm expecting and waiting for everyone to be evil.
Yeah.
Or for there to be a turn. I guess with Herb Smith that happened, sort of, but
it was Wallace Shawn.
I know. What a waste of that actor in retrospect.
Yeah. Like, truly.
Make him a true mentor and like use his existing warmth. But for this
make him Joel.
Sure, yeah. Wallace Shawn, you know, and that's the thing. He was originally cast as Joel, and then Michael Zegan, you know, showed up to the table read.
Well, Scott Patterson weirdly told Wallace Shawn the wrong day for the audition.
I know. Scott's kind of the puppet master of this whole operation, if you think about it. And
it's fishing rods.
And his social media persona, guys, it's an act. Whatever you perceive that to be, it's an act. He's a puppet master.
That's incredible.
But then the only, like, ominous thing is the way they frame her. So they don't seem like hucksters per se, like we're trying to take advantage of her. But it just seems like standard of the time sexism.
He mentioned that the two of you have been teaming up lately, which I find very interesting.
Teaming up?
Just at parties, just for fun. However, have you ever thought about super doing weird it professionally?
I don't understand.
Sometimes a charming, funny guy with a cute, dizzy broad on his arm is a good sell.
And I'm the dizzy broad.
Fine. I'll be the dizzy broad and you'd be the charming, funny guy.
Perfect.
So,
like, yeah, good.
If I remember correctly, that was sort of the setup with Nichols and May. But then the result of that, if I'm remembering the routines correctly, is that essentially, or in a lot of their recorded stuff, Nichols had to be the straight man.
Yeah.
And then May was the funny one. Yeah. May was the one that people loved and
the
thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like even in that power dynamic.
Yeah.
It's strange, but yeah, the idea that she's betraying what we've seen to be her authentic comedic voice thus far. I agree with you that it's a turf war with Susie, where it's like, no, my client. But then at the same time, I do think it's true that she doesn't want someone to stunt Midge's personal comedic artistic development. I think both things are true.
So I have a completely different take on this, and it is from my experience, which you'll find interesting because I have the same exact – I have a relationship with my manager that I think is really unique and really similar to that of Midge and Susie. I met a lot of managers, but she's really specifically like – we're friends. She has very specific tastes. She's a hard ass, and she really doesn't. She really wants her clients that she picks up to be like, you know, the best possible version of themselves, and they're not making any kind of compromises. Mm-hmm. And she's not like, I think Susie's a little inexperienced in that, like, she would put herself in between her client and agencies, like, doesn't actually make sense, like you're saying. But I had an experience 2 years ago with WME, where I was coming off a really big movie. WME came in and scooped me up. And this is the crazy, I've never told this story before, but it is interesting in terms of, like, when I was watching this, I was like, that is fucking exactly what happened to me. Like, WME came in and then, you know, didn't do anything for me. Like, they did the exact same thing that Susie's saying. Like, they scoop people up, and if lightning strikes, then they'll take credit for it.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, then they'll dump you. And that's exactly what happened to me. Like, I came in, I auditioned for things. They didn't, you know, I worked with really good people below, but like the upper echelons, the people who had come in and gotten me on the, you know, on their roster, just didn't do anything. They were like, they didn't make the calls. They literally forgot I existed. And so my team couldn't do anything because the powers that be were just like, whatever, we don't care. And I was watching Susie have this like crazy monologue where she was like, don't you fucking think you're gonna get in there and fuck with my client the way. And I had this reaction of like, oh my God, like, I wish that I had a Susie at that time, you know? And like, I wish that my, like, because I really feel like my, like, who I'm working with now would have said those things. So, you know, the way that she felt after that whole year of like wasted time, essentially, I know she wished she could have gone in there and said those things, you know? But in reality, you don't say no to WME, or you don't say no to these big agencies that come in. You have to take your chances, and you have to think, hopefully lightning is going to strike, you know?
I'm glad to hear that experience for actors as well as writers.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, it's very much like, here's some advice to any young people trying to make it as a writer or actor. Like, there's the feeling that you get an agent and then it happens to you, but the dynamic has kind of shifted that now it's like you get a job and then we will represent you.
Exactly. And the agency thing is always a gamble. You can't really rely. And I've learned this lesson so many times. And again, this is why I'm so grateful to have Lab with a new agency now. And I really feel like I fit in there and I'm happy about that. And I have, again, it's such a great relationship with my manager that I just feel so fucking grateful because not a lot of people do have that kind of symbiotic thing that Midge and Susie have. But like, I've learned this so many times. You have to sail your own ship. Mm-hmm. You're the sails and you're the wind in your sails.
Your reps aren't going to get the job for you.
No, and that's not their job.
Yeah.
You know, like people didn't do things on my behalf that was literally their job to do when I was with WME. Like literally they didn't. They said, I will make these phone calls. And then those phone calls didn't happen or whatever. But, you know, you have to be the wind in your own sails and you have to put up the sails. And you'll find that that experience of, oh, an agency signs me and then it's going to happen is like never the case. You always have to be the one finding out your direction and keeping the forward momentum in that same direction. And if you relax at any moment, you know, you'll watch yourself drift a little bit. And it's like, it's a really interesting lesson to learn over and over again in different ways, you know, for better or for worse.
Yeah, so you really connected with the care that, no, you're not sleeping. What, did you put yourself to sleep? I know you're sick. You deserve some rest after this. So to back it up a little bit.
Back it up.
Susie finds out that Midge had this meeting. Midge is very upfront about it. She doesn't mince words. But then Susie does say something that I feel like, and I'd like your experience with this as well, that I think a lot of talented women probably hear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very deflating, I think, for Midge.
Industrials?
Yeah.
Wait, you're going to spin around on a platform hawking Buicks?
What's wrong with that? Buicks are very fine automobiles.
Miriam, he just sold you some line because he wants to get in your pants.
He does not want to get in my pants.
He wants to fuck you.
He wants me to work with him. He says we'll be like Nichols and May. Nichols and May don't fuck.
Nichols and May totally fuck.
That's not what he says.
I walked in on them once in the bathroom here. Even their fucking was hilarious.
That's so good.
Randall is totally legit. I met his agent and everything.
This is so funny.
But, I love it.
But the idea that I've talked to a lot of friends of mine who are doing comedy stuff, and I remember one friend of mine said her ex-boyfriend, when she started pursuing this stuff, he said, well, if you get jobs, it's not because you're funny. It's only because people want to have sex
dump
with you.
Dump him.
Well, she did. This was post-dump. But that was the position and kind of framework he gave her as such a gift.
What a nice way to make someone feel really shitty no matter what happens
right,
to them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I feel like that must be such a common experience where it's like, you even like second guess your own value sometimes because there is this like weird element of power and sexuality associated with those transactions.
Yeah, you always think that's not me. You know, I don't put myself out there in that way or whatever. So I'm not subject to that same system, but we all are. So you're lying to yourself if you don't think that. It's funny that Susie said that to her. Because I think as the audience when I'm watching it, I didn't get that impression.
Mm-mm. No, you know? I didn't get that either. I don't think Randall's interested in that.
But at the same time, who knows? You know, like, of course he does. You know what I mean? Like, maybe he doesn't even know he's doing that. He's like, you know, they are picking her for her looks in a certain way, you know, and it isn't about her comedic talent because they want a Dizzy Broad on, they want to ride her coattails.
I disagree with that because I think if she wasn't funny at all, if it was just like, yeah, get Penny Pan, get Vivian.
I'm not saying either or. I'm saying, you know, she's funny and beautiful. You know, if she was somebody who looked a little different or whatever, it wouldn't be, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like in a certain sense that has to play into it. And Susie sees her entirely separately from that.
Mm-hmm.
And she's trying to cultivate that part of her, the inner strength or whatever. I don't know,
right.
The inner beauty.
You're saying she sees her totally distinct from sexuality?
Well, just she, and who knows? I mean, you know, Susie might be in love with Midge, but we don't think that.
I wish they gave Susie some sexuality.
Yeah.
Like, I think we are to assume she is gay, but it would have been nice to see her, like, have any sort of, like, personal life.
Yeah.
Well, they...
Season 2, I guess.
I guess. Well, maybe. Not a great track record with LGBTQ characters.
True.
But I did like
they're
that
they... They're going to have to hire a consultant.
They're going to... They're going to have to hire a consultant.
They are.
I mean, maybe.
Be great.
I wonder how much Jen Kirkman's experiences informed this, too, as one of the comedian consultants on this show. Because she probably had a lot to say about this stuff in particular. And I could see Sheila using her a lot as a sounding board for this sort of thing. I did think the joke of them replaying I Enjoy Being a Girl while Susie walks through B. Alton's was very funny.
I didn't like that. I felt like we're supposed to be laughing at Susie a little bit. Like, how funny that she's in a makeup store.
Well, I thought it was just not even so much to do with her sexuality as, like, she doesn't enjoy anything. Like, it wasn't
she
even like...
She hates, like, facades and, like, things like... B. Altman isn't just makeup. It's, like, frivolity and excess. And Susie... I love Susie as a character because it's not just that she's, like, fuck that shit. She's, like... You can see that she's never had an experience. She comes from poverty. She comes from, like, a dysfunctional family. So she doesn't really, like, the stuff. She always feels ill at ease there. And she's really good at pointing out the flaws in a place like that, you know?
Which is why I really appreciated her gesture of reconciliation to Midge in that scene.
Excuse me. Is that mermaid ice? I'm sorry. I'm in a big hurry. My man's coming over and I'm all out of my mermaid ice eyeshadow. And if I am not wearing that when he gets home, all hell breaks loose.
Really?
You kidding? I couldn't get him to give me the time of day, much less give me the, you know, time of day. And then I can't.
Is that what she's referring to?
I do. You came in here and we talked about
I told you my life was crap. You sold me the mermaid ice and now my life is a fat, fuzzy peach.
Hey, Elia knows something about that, right?
What?
Fat, fuzzy peach.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Elia? What?
Call me by your name.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Oh.
There's a peach in it.
There's a peach in it.
Something with a peach.
It's a prequel to James and the Giant Peach.
James and the Giant Peach does sound like a porn.
Doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
I mean, it does now in a post
in
Call
a
Me
post-
by Your Name
world.
Oh,
so
in a post-Timotei landscape. yeah, but this is that they didn't drag out the fight that the last episode kind of ended on for like 3 or 4 more episodes. Yeah. And it was just like, oh, yeah, you're sorry.
Yeah,
right?
But there's still tension throughout this episode. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, like, resolve.
It comes back up.
You know, it comes back up which is awesome.
At the end. Her impassioned plea to her when she goes over.
Which I loved.
To her.
Oh. I frankly loved.
You want to do this?
Yes.
Do you?
Yes.
I can't tell anymore.
I love this.
You want me to get rid of the phone? Because I can get rid of the phone.
Do not get rid of the phone.
I don't need to have a goddamn phone. I don't have anybody I have to call. I got that phone for you. For this partnership that I thought we were starting.
We are.
Does your new agent know that?
He's not my...
You do not meet with any agents without me knowing about it, ever.
I did not know he was going to be there, I swear.
Bullshit! You're not an idiot! Just drop this doe-eyed Bambi thing right now. Okay, I'm so sick of you acting all innocent. Oh, I don't know how the world works because I'm a housewife and I wear 4 layers of petticoats. It is tired and it is weak and you are not tired and you are not fucking weak. And if you want to be a comic, you are going to have to grow the fuck up right now.
Ugh, I love it.
And then for the first time in the episode, after all the infidelity and all the stuff with Joel and her family and her parents and comedy and all these experiences and going to jail twice, for the first time ever, Midge cries.
Yes.
I don't know what to do lately. I'm trying to be strong and independent, but I saw Joel the other night and he was with her and every time I think I can breathe again... And I'm trying to get it right. I'm trying to figure it out. I know the parties aren't gigs. I know I'm not really doing stand-up. I don't want to be a second-rate Nichols and May. I'd never even heard of Nichols and May, and I've got news for you. If you're going to be a personal manager, then sometimes you're going to have to deal with the personal, and this is personal. All of this. And it's not just deals and lectures. Sometimes you're going to have to buy some Kleenex and let me cry and pat me on the back and say they're there.
Okay, that's not really my...
You're going to have to listen to me talk about my husband and my kids.
Both of them?
Yes, both of them. And you are going to have to stop backing away from me when I feel like my life is falling apart. You are going to have to tell me I'm good when I'm not.
You want me to lie?
Yes, that is what managers do. Do you understand?
Is that really the first time in the whole series?
I think she kind of tears up at one of the dinners, but she doesn't like cry.
She doesn't sob.
Yeah.
We don't see her. I mean, you have to maybe imagine that, you know, by yourself at night in bed, but like this cathartic moment is awesome. And
because it's kind of funny at the same time, too. Like the beginning of it.
Yeah.
And then
the
Susie's.
Yeah.
And then her, like, trying to comfort her as well.
Oh, it's so great. I think it's amazing because I think I love – it's, like, what the audience wants to say to Midge all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, this whole, like, yeah, you're not an idiot. Don't pretend, you know. Like, she's, I didn't – you know, she's floating through her life, like, depending on this part of her that's, like, the pretty girl, the – you know, she's fuckable. She's, like – she can sell makeup. She's, you know, this person, persona who she is in the parties, right? In that circuit, the woman. But then who she really is and who Susie's trying to get her to lean into is the woman that said, like, who wouldn't get back together with Joel.
If I may make a weird comparison.
Okay.
Because I think this scene's about a lot of things.
No,
I think it's
let's keep going.
Okay.
I kind of want to know what
so,
it was.
So anyway.
Write her in an email later.
Sure. Abe gets a job. That's
yeah,
pretty
no,
weird,
okay,
you guys.
Okay, what is it?
Well, I think, you know, the scene's about two women and two people working together, like, expressing their boundaries while still, like, oh, if you want to manage me, if you want to be my personal manager, that means getting into personal stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, a lovely way of doing that where it still shows care. But it's like, okay, if this is the deal, then this is my deal. Like, if mm-hmm. you need this from me, I need this from you. And it's, like, the clarity of that communication is really lovely. It also reminded me, too, of some of those scenes on The West Wing where Toby would just talk to the president, President Bartlett, about, like, you're not just folks. You're not just, like,
yeah.
you know, a charming guy that's good for all time zones. You don't have to act like it. You're a good man. You don't have to act like it.
Mm.
You're this. You don't have to act like that. And just, like, pushing someone who they just see the clarity and nature of their character and integrity
right.
to be that thing rather than
right.
acting in these certain things that are distracting from that ultimate
right.
trajectory.
Right.
I haven't watched The West Wing yet.
Wow.
And everyone at work gives me a hard time about it literally every day.
Mm-hmm. Literally
so,
every day?
Yeah. Like, wow. Well, because then someone else started to watch it. Like, everyone mm-hmm. could tell I specifically would like it.
Yeah.
And there are lots of shows that are
it's so good, dude.
Big shows that everyone knows I wouldn't like. Like, I don't watch Game of Thrones and everyone feels I wouldn't like it.
Yeah.
But everyone knows I'd like West Wing.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I promised I was going to watch it over hiatus.
Oh, fun news.
Yeah.
So when's your hiatus end?
I don't know.
Oh, you're not?
We
oh.
We got to get a season 3, I
TBD
guess.
TBD for
yeah.
season 3. Okay. Yeah. Well, I.
So you should
yeah,
be watching
gonna,
it right now.
Yeah. What?
I would highly recommend it. I'm.
Should
I'm,
we put one in? Like,
yeah, you guys want to take a break real quick? Just watch first half
yeah.
of season
yeah.
1?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quick.
Take a break. Yeah, that became one of.
I like that comparison.
Yeah.
I don't hate that. I mean, it is. And that is the like. Shaping power of a manager too, to a personal manager to be like, this is what I see in you. This is like, if you're able to see the potential of someone and the potential of that person, not like, here's how I wish you would be if only you didn't have these other flaws, but like, I've seen what you can do. It's not like what
sure.
you can be in the future if you work on it. It's like, I've already seen that you can do this. So let's figure out how to hone that. Let's figure out how to drop away everything else. And that's what a manager is. So I love Susie coming in and being like, when you're on stage doing that thing you do that made me sign you or whatever, that makes me want to work with you, you're not that, like, petticoats, I'm an idiot, doe-eyed bullshitter. Mm-hmm. You're not that person. So I know you're not. I know that's an act. Drop it for me.
Right.
I love that. I think that's so great. And then that clarity of communication that you're talking about where she's like, yeah, but here's the thing. That I do have a soft side, and it's
right.
this vulnerability that you need to be okay with.
It's like in these last two episodes, she's going through the entirety of Michelle's arc in 18 episodes of Bunheads.
Right.
It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Why are you in this town? What are
yeah,
your goals
yeah,
here?
Yeah.
And two, I love the idea that the show is chiefly about, I mean, we spend a lot of time with the family, but it feels chiefly about Midge and Susie because
mm-hmm.
we've seen a lot of stories of the great men and the men and women behind them,
mm-hmm.
Lincoln, and then Mary Todd Lincoln, and what's
mm-hmm.
her deal, and
mm-hmm.
all that stuff. But we haven't seen that much of, like, the women behind women or the men
mm-hmm.
behind women. Like, what
right.
made, even in the Post, it's like, what made Kay Graham? They kind of get at that a little bit.
Right.
And the Post was so, it was so whatever. Did you guys watch
no,
it?
No, I didn't watch it.
It was so whatever. It's extremely whatever.
Wow.
Did
I
you
watched,
see it?
Yeah, and I watched it, and I was like, all
right. Right.
And then it was over and I was like, okay.
It was like that,
I don't need to see this again.
Totally.
It did feel a little bit like Kat Graham doing the right thing because Ben Bradley told her to.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, totally. See, and they don't quite also it was distracting how every character was a TV star.
Yeah.
It was like Hanks and Streep hosting SNL, but the cast was prestige TV.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Woods and Jesse Plemons, all those guys. Mm. But yeah, so I like this idea of we're going to see what goes into making a woman great, which that's not even really the story of Gilmore either, because it's not about Lorelai achieving greatness. It's about Lorelai and Rory just maintaining
mm-hmm.
the integrity of their connection.
Mm-hmm. It's about a girl failing to mm-hmm. achieve greatness.
Yeah, yes. It's about a girl, yeah.
It's about Rory failing to achieve greatness.
Yeah.
Ultimately and chiefly.
There's a thing, though, that stresses me out in the Midge-Susie dynamic, though, which is that, like, Midge is going through a divorce. She has a job for the first time, and she's trying to make her career as a stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And Susie has nothing else going on but Midge. I wish they'd touched on that a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when she says, I got a phone for you. Like, Susie's basically saying, like, I'm reorganizing my life
around you
to be about you.
Right.
Maybe Midge could have been like, get another client or something.
Yeah.
Like, it does seem like a lot of pressure to put on Midge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I get that.
That stressed me out a little bit.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah, I mean, maybe we could do in season two, like, see her at the Gaslight more and, like, you know, the Gaslight being where she sees clients. I mean, she could pick somebody else up easily. It does not.
And then maybe Midge gets jealous. Another client,
like,
yeah.
I think Midge totally seems like someone who would say you should get more clients. And then mm-hmm. as soon as Susie did, she wouldn't like it.
Yeah. Why would you have any other client? Yeah.
Yeah.
Am I not enough for you?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I wasn't enough for Joel.
Yeah.
There are those managers who only have, like, one client.
What if she started managing
Penny
Pan?
What can I say? I think she's got it.
Yeah.
Poor Penny. Again, yeah. I don't hate the girl.
No.
I don't hate the girl. Well, I guess we should talk about...
We're going out to dinner!
It's my favorite thing ever.
All his business with, like,
so good.
Playing it chill, because all these, like, scientists...
see it coming.
But then when you rewatch it,
yeah.
He's just like,
mm-hmm.
okay. Because all these scientists from the Bell Lab approach him about his job.
Right, yeah.
And he's just
like, I'm loath to do that.
I could move some things around.
Like, what a cool cucumber, man.
And you kind of see where Midge gets it from, too, in terms of, like, performances.
I love when typically calm people get really excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's just charming.
Yeah.
He was just dancing around and stuff.
I was rooting for him.
Oh, yeah.
I thought, since you guys talked about his musical quality, I've been noticing it more and more. And
mm-hmm.
I also, not to brag, I saw him in a musical recently.
Really? Oh, you saw him in
Hamilton, right?
The band's visit. Yeah.
Tony Shalhoub.
I am not throwing away my shot.
That's amazing, Kevin. That's great.
Throwing away my shot.
I just got a shift to King's College. Damn, I'm amazed and astonished.
I was thinking, like, it would be interesting to know where being in this musical overlapped with filming the show, because I wondered. Cause
I think
the
way
he can't stop.
Because his co-star in the musical is on an episode of Maisel.
Who's his co-star?
It's this woman, Katrina Lang. She's in, I think, next week or the one after.
Oh, okay.
I wondered if that was...
I appreciate you referring to the episodes in terms of the schedule of our podcast.
Yes.
I appreciate that. And I hope people out there listening and watching along do the same.
Take their cues.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. So yeah, I wondered if that's just how he is or if he was kind of in that. Because that is the same cadence he uses in this show.
Oh,
too.
Yeah?
Because he has like an Egyptian accent in the show.
Yeah, he's playing a different ethnicity in the show. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Are you swooning over Shalhoub? Mm-hmm.
So much going on for Shalhoub
sure.
right now. It's his time.
It is his time.
This is like
he's peaking.
He's having a Laura Dern-esque year.
Peak Shalhoub over
could say.
Here.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Now, unlike anything I've ever talked about on the air, I actually stand by Squarespace. I actually do because I've used it for everything I've made. Literally, GilmoreGuysShow.com, the very website for this very podcast, was made using Squarespace. How beautiful is that? KevinTPorter.com. I made that using Squarespace. My old bake shop website, that was made using Squarespace. Because you can do it all with Squarespace. You can sell content on your website. So exclusive stuff behind a paywall. You can sell memberships, courses, or sell files your customers can download, like PDFs, music, or ebooks. You can do that with Squarespace. You can do analytics with Squarespace so you can figure out who's visiting your website and why, and figure out how to get traffic and where's it coming from. You can also have people do flexible payments on Squarespace. Make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. Accept credit cards, PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. How nice is that? You can also do email campaigns, so there's constant outreach for your stuff and people know where to find you. So I'm going to let you know where to find Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. That's squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now let's talk about your social battery. Maybe right now it's bursting at the seams with energy. Maybe it's a little drained. Maybe you're one of those people like my friend with their phone battery that keeps it 2% all the time, even when they stay home all day. And they definitely could charge up if they wanted to, but they don't. Well, regardless of where it is, it's important to understand why it is the way it is. Why is the battery low when it gets low? Is it because you're feeling less social? Is it because you're feeling sad? Is it because of emotions you've yet to identify? Or maybe just boundaries you haven't set for yourself yet? Either way, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? How do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, maybe you don't. Maybe you need a little more alone time. Well, either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. This is so important because I've been in therapy for 10 plus years, for some would say, technically, 11 years this month, and it's helped me so much understand where I get my energy from, how I use my energy, how to better use my energy, and how to maintain things in a way that's sustainable and healthy and good. And that's to do, of course, with boundaries, but also just understanding who I am and what I want. And I couldn't have done so much of that work without therapy. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GilmoreGuys today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GilmoreGuys. Although one thing that I thought was funny is the story progresses. You meet Midge's brother for the first time and her sister-in-law. But then at the end, when he's talking to one of the guys from the Bell Lab, and he's like, "Well, I moved some things around," and mm-hmm. and he mentions casually, the guy from the Bell Lab mentions Midge's arrest.
That's cool.
The only possible bump I see would be your daughter's arrests.
Her arrests.
We know a couple of misdemeanors. She pled guilty. It shouldn't be too big a problem.
Right.
And Abe has he kind of covers his reaction, and then he has a fundamental mistrust.
Kids.
But, and again, no spoilies, but that stuff doesn't really come up again. Like, I thought, oh shit, this is going to make his job fall apart. Like, this is going to put in danger. When he's like,
"Me too.
Oh, she'll be fine. It's just a standard background check." But then they don't really do anything.
Yeah, Amy
with
doesn't
it.
Really work like that. And, in good ways and in bad ways, I think.
Sure, and
that's
even
a good, that's a good
in
way of
good and
it,
bad ways, because you don't need to
For instance, he just wants to get in your pants. Like on another show, there would have been a moment at the end where the guy says, "You know, and maybe afterwards we can go to my place," and we all go, "Oh, he did want to get in her pants."
Yeah,
but in this, you never really know, and sometimes that's cool because that's life. And sometimes
that's
it's frustrating because it's TV and you want it to.
That's
end.
Life. It's also TV, though.
Also, what's her community service? Is she doing it? Is she doing it off screen?
Oh, my God.
Like, the whole thing. Yeah. When she gets sentenced.
I forgot about that.
So you meet Midge's brother, Noah, and his wife, Astrid.
I like them.
I really connected with the character of Astrid.
You did.
Because
yeah.
I feel like I'm an Astrid on this podcast.
Yeah.
Which is like well-meaning, but super annoying and kind of missing the mark.
I also wanted to ask, you know, what's a masseuse? And why is it so big?
This is something Astrid gets for the family as a gift from Israel after her 17th visit or whatever it is.
Boy, I'm going to embarrass myself now. I know it's a thing that you put on your door.
That's, guys, there's
I don't know why.
There's a way. There's a way we can look
There's
this
no
up.
Way to find this out, unfortunately.
Oh, really? There's no way to... Okay. And even if our listeners, sometimes they like to chime in and say what things are.
I mean, if you ask me, a mezuzah comprises a piece of parchment called a clef, containing a decorative case inscribed with specific Hebrew verses from the Torah. Mm-hmm. These verses consist of Jewish prayer, beginning with the phrase, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord, our God, the Lord is one." In mainstream rabbinic Judaism, a mezuzah is affixed to the doorposts of Jewish homes to fulfill the mitzvah, to write the words of God on the gates and doorposts of your house, as in Deuteronomy 6:9. Some interpret Jewish law to require mezuzah in every doorway in the home, except bathrooms, laundry rooms, and closets if they are too small to qualify as rooms.
Mm.
That's just my take, though.
Yeah. Hot take, Evan.
Yeah, that's just me kind of riffing on hot take.
So it's just you thinking, like, off the top of it.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know.
Right. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's that?
I'm guessing. This is 100% just a guess.
I see. And so if it's so big, okay, that makes sense. Like, I was like, is this supposed to be a necklace?
I don't think it's supposed to be.
You could see it on the, like, on the entrance of a mansion or something. Right. But yeah, an apartment, it would be
a
weird.
A door necklace.
Which is why the size of it was so, like, whoa.
Yeah.
Is Astrid the first character in Amy Sherman Palladino history to actually actively like children?
Oh, that's so interesting.
No, there's
Well, there's the dance teacher. No, I guess she didn't actually.
Miss Patty?
Miss Patty didn't like children.
She liked when boys turned into young men. She oh, my think God. She liked what?
But you have characters who have children.
Right.
And Astrid, in a unique way, liked spending time with them. Like the scene where she has the kid on her lap and is talking to him, I was like, whoa.
That's true.
This is groundbreaking for the show. Wait. No, come on. There's
like maybe
be...
the actress herself, like Amy, was like, now, you're going to want to put the kid on your lap, and when it's there, it's going to squirm, but you're going to like it.
Don't be frightened.
Do we have a kid wrangler on set?
Yeah, don't be frightened. And at any time, if you feel uncomfortable, you can shout anything. Just push him off. Push it off. Like, no, Amy.
Maybe Richard Gilmore likes children a little bit. I mean, Dean had a bunch of kids in Colin A Year in the Life, so I feel like he likes
them.
Dean.
But you never saw them positively interacting with a child.
Oh, you're right.
Rory kind of does.
Bailey has a thing coming up, which I think is more Bailey than the character, I will say.
Oh, in the show.
It was a moment where I looked at the screen and said, that is Bailey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wait, in this season.
I think the last episode.
Okay, gotcha. Cool.
That's funny. Yeah, I think it is the first character.
Kids, I'm going through so bunheads.
Aw, she tends to bring them back.
Jezebel James, the whole thing is about a surrogate pregnancy, right?
That's why you love her, because she is so into pregnancy-based plot. She loves a pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't but like what comes after, though.
She cannot bear to have a kid on
She's like the opposite of most mothers.
And like pro-life.
Amy Soup's pro-life.
She's pro-life.
And you
she
know what?
She loves a pregnancy. She doesn't like what comes after.
New York Times, Time Magazine, if you're listening, quote us. Amy Sherman Palladino is super
very pro-life. That's a direct quote.
Ay, ay, ay.
I brought you a gift, too.
Is it another giant mezuzah?
Oh, God, such a stupid gift.
Astrid, no.
No, Rose has a mezuzah. You have a mezuzah. It's not shoes. You can't just change them out every season.
No, but if we ever move to a very big house.
Oh, I just wish Rose liked me.
She likes you very much. She loves you, Astrid.
I make her nervous.
Breathing makes her nervous.
I thought the converting would help. I know that it's hard having an outsider in your family.
You are not an
so
outsider.
So sweet.
I heard comments at our wedding.
No one commented.
What's up with the shiks on Noah married?
Aunt Gertie, once.
I'm an outsider. I'm barren.
Astrid, you're young.
No, I'm not. I'm 30.
I hated that.
We're seeing the fertility doctor.
No,
tomorrow.
Yeah,
I pioneers in cervical.
I think it's a joke, though, right?
Well, everyone looks good in a cap.
No,
I'm almost too afraid to go. I mean, what if it doesn't work this time?
But Midge is so sweet
what
here.
What did you enjoy used to get pregnant?
Well, sex.
Yeah, that seems to work for most people.
Oh, honey. Oh,
7 years of trying. I mean, what if he leaves me?
Noah is not going to leave you.
You did everything perfectly and that yutz left you.
Noah loves you. And I know you think he's pretty dreamy, but I'm his sister, so I can tell you the truth. He's a big nerd who
he's a cock. He's a cock, I say.
He's a cock. He's a total cock. Okay?
I thought that was really sweet of Midge to take the time.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite Midge moments maybe ever.
Too, yeah.
You never really see her be there for someone else in that way.
Right. And at the same time, it's affirming Astrid's version of womanhood and the dignity of like the role that she mm-hmm. wants to play in her family mm-hmm. while not being counter to what Midge wants to do mm-hmm. in her own life. And then she falls up with Noah and he's like, I don't care about kids. And it's just all something Astrid's putting on herself. Did you guys laugh at
She thought it was cute that the 13-year-old would offer to help.
The emphasis on education in the Jewish faith may be the thing that I admire the most.
Anyway.
Oh, poor Astrid. Oh, my gosh.
Girl.
She's a good casting.
Yeah, like she is a good
casting. Her voice reminded me of someone else, possibly in the Amy Sherman Palladino universe. Uh-huh. I couldn't think of who.
Was it? It wasn't Lindsay, was it? From
like her soft voice.
Good guess.
Was it a bunhead?
Maybe. I don't want to waste our precious time on this, but if you think
let's
of it
let's get to
later,
the bottom of this. No. Well.
Whose voice is it?
Whose voice is it?
Did you notice when she says, oh, I make her nervous and breathing makes her mm-hmm. nervous about the mom?
Mm-hmm. It was about her asthma? Go ahead.
Oh.
No.
Well, so the actress who plays the mom, as I'm sure you all know, is on Speechless.
Oh.
Whoa. So I've seen her in person. I have not really gotten a chance to know her that well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But she is an actress with an extremely nervous energy. And I thought that was because when you watch the pilot, mm-hmm. it does not. She seems more like the point of that character is this is what Midge will become if she continues on this path.
Sure.
But I think she's diverged a lot from that possibly. Because I always find it really fun when actor and character become one.
Totally.
And I think that's what's gone on a little bit with that character.
They're riding into it a bit. Yeah, it seems like it. So then at the restaurant that they're at, they see Joel and Penny Pan. And I thought it was very sweet that they're like, okay, we have to leave
I love
now.
That.
Yeah, that they all banded together.
Such solidarity.
And, I love that every person said something. Do you have that clip?
No, but I'll put it in right here.
What do we do?
We should leave.
We're not leaving.
He's practically on top of us.
Wait, is that the secretary?
There are 1,000 restaurants in the city. What are the odds?
1 in 16,450.
12,352.
I'm taking into account weather effects that some restaurants are closed on.
Yeah, yeah, I'm calculating differentials in geography, quality.
We get it, guys. The odds are low.
She doesn't even look Jewish. Is she Jewish? Or...
We should leave.
Papa, this is your celebration. Don't let him ruin it.
I couldn't find my family cufflinks. It was an omen. I should have heeded it.
Papa, your cufflinks were not an omen.
Her ankles are the same size as her calves.
Okay. It was like such a quick interaction, but everyone
Everybody
went around and said
own...
something that was so on brand. It was
that's
marvelous.
Awesome.
On
yeah,
brand.
Too bad.
We
usually have clips.
Well, no,
but...
we'll put it in right here. We'll
you know,
insert it. Well, I'll edit it in.
Sometimes we just kind of, it's a grab bag.
It's
he just chooses whatever
you
randomly.
You said you don't want to
so,
do that many clips
you know,
at the beginning
and
of the show. And
no, but maybe you actively chose not to have my favorite clips.
No, but I should have. That was my bad for not asking you as a guest, like anything you want me to pull?
Any clips I could have ready?
I have asked guests.
I mean,
that
he's
before.
A good host, it's just not professional.
Yeah, it's totally
I know,
fine.
And I accept main that. Thing. I'll take the L. I'll take the L on
that's
that
L,
one.
That's the L for you. That's the L for you.
What?
That's the L for you.
Did you time
you,
travel
Carrie.
Again?
Thank you, Carrie.
I'm sorry.
I love this scene, and I loved the scene after with. In the street with Joel.
You know what?
And I gotta say, that hand grab, I was like, Niagara Falls down there, baby.
Oh,
I was
Alice,
like, hello.
You can't say that.
Why not?
No, you can't. I'm sorry.
I'm pretty sure I can.
Yeah, you can.
I gotta say, I'm with Kevin on this one.
Wow.
Not into Joel.
Finally.
God.
Not into Joel.
I'm actually relieved. He has been.
I've been losing my mind.
Also, my feeling about Joel is, and forgive me if this is something. Because I listen to so much of your podcast so fast, I sometimes forget where your thoughts end and mine begin.
Doesn't matter.
<that's> But the Amy Sherman Palladino character he reminds me most of is Digger.
Digger!
Okay, good.
Yeah.
And because the thing that was so confusing about Digger, which and listening to your podcast helped put in perspective, was like you were on this real roller coaster of Digger. Like, what is the show telling me to do? Mm-hmm. Do I like him
or
not?
Yeah, that's great, yeah.
Because it's like one episode, it's like, oh, he doesn't want to sleep in the same room as her. I don't like him. And then the next episode, it was like, oh, he's being funny and charming. I like him again. And again, that's Amy Sherman Palladino. She's uniquely good
life.
At, like, that's the thing. Like,
which
most people
so
aren't just good or bad.
It's just her heightened reality and the way that she paints a world that's so, like, bright and super stylized elements that don't have any place in reality. It's a cartoonish world. And then there's these really hyper-real characters. Yeah,
that's why
it's
I think like we all keep coming back.
That's right. It's like there's nobody else that does that. It's so interesting.
Yeah, and I feel that same way about Joel, where it's like, I like him now. I don't like him now. He seems okay here, but now he sucks. And
yeah,
so I don't have a hard yes or no on Joel, but in general, I don't have a hard on for Joel.
Thank
you. And this scene bugged me, like when he was like rubbing where her wedding ring would have been, looking all like butt hurt. It's like,
yeah, who cares?
Fault is this?
That you moved in with the lady. Like take a knee, Joel. Go to Music Man by yourself, or it's just you and her, but it feels like by yourself, or you wish it was by yourself.
Midge would love Music
being
Man.
Being in a bad relationship is infinitely worse than being alone, Joel, but...
He's the strongest weak man ever.
Yeah. I don't buy that. What's his strength?
He just is so... He fucked up. He took a wrong turn. He fucked up royally.
Yeah.
He did it on purpose. And he's like the Bernie voter. He's like the guy who's like, the guy who voted for Trump because he's like, I'm going to take the whole world down. And it's like, no, you're not. You don't have any power. You're like a stupid idiot who's on top and has too much privilege. And then he like fucks his life up. And then now he's just spending all this time regretting it and looking hot while he does it. Look, sometimes you tune in to this show for my really good observations on cultural
really
anomalies. And you tune in, you really relate to what I say. And sometimes I'm on cold medicine and you tune in and what I have to say is bullshit.
Niagara Falls down there.
Niagara Falls down there. And I can't promise it's consistency.
Oh, boy. Well, let me ask you guys a question. I'll play a clip.
You've always been the funny one.
Thanks.
Astrid kissed the baby.
It was inevitable.
Astrid loves babies.
Did you also forget that Midge had a baby?
Until this scene? No.
Well, there was the early... You only remember the kids exist because Astrid keeps their memory alive.
She's carrying the torch single-handedly.
Don't forget the children.
Astrid kissed the baby. I had a baby?
I really... But was that really just for the baby, that moment? Because I liked that you've always been the funny one moment.
Oh, I loved that. I thought that even Noah could see that in Midge from a young age. And he's like, yeah, what are you
doing? I love their relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it would have been easy to give her an asshole brother and mm-hmm. have a fight. But, like, I liked that they were...
So
or
real.
Make her another only kid. Because we've seen that so much on shows like
and
this.
And then they had this really real, like, this is what I see in total. This is a... Every adult, like, benevolent sibling relationship looks like this to me. It's, like, very realistic. And, like, how does she do it? How does she do that? Time and again. I can't do anything. I'm just sick.
My third watching was when You're the Funny One really hit me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, because was it supposed to be that's when she starts to realize she needs to do comedy on her own?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's like a fulcrum moment for her.
Yeah. Yeah. But then it didn't seem, but I thought it would have been cool if that was it.
Yeah.
I think I have a real sensitive soft spot for that sort of way that people communicate, whether it's Midge's brother saying that to, no, you're the funny one. What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Or neither of you guys watched Sports Night, right?
I did.
Mm-hmm. You did? Yeah. Okay. Oh, the why have you not watched The West Wing?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird.
I watched parts of Newsroom. I watched Studio 60.
That's so strange.
I love American President. I don't know what... West Wing's kind of a daunting show to get caught up on.
It's only really four seasons. The last three don't count.
That's what he's telling me. Yeah. There's nothing you can say to convince me to watch The West Wing that hasn't been yelled at me.
Sure.
All year.
Well, you'll remember at the end of first season of Sports Night that Dana Whitaker, as played by Felicity Huffman, has that line where she keeps telling the guy she's breaking up with, I was a lot funnier than you ever gave me credit for. And then at the end, she says something funny to Peter Krause's character, and he laughs.
It's funny.
And he says, nothing, I just think you're funny. And I cry every time I watch this scene. It's so sweet. Or honestly, my favorite romance in all of The Office, which is a show I had a lot of ups and downs with, was Holly and Michael Scott. Like that first scene, and it really, even thinking about it, gets me choked up, like where Holly comes down and she starts doing a Yoda voice with Michael Scott. And just the idea of like, no, I understand that thing about you that makes you that way. And maybe you're kind of a dweeb in the office or people make fun of you, but I like it. I see something valuable in that, in the way that you specifically communicate.
It's interesting and a little disappointing that like Joel doesn't seem to really get and appreciate Midge.
No.
And then she meets this comedy guy who you think maybe that will be him, and he seems to only just look at her like as a, what can you do for me?
Mm-hmm.
And her brother's the only one who really gets her.
Well, because he's not threatened.
He's not threatened
by her. He's able to see her accomplishments since he's the star pupil of the family. He's able to see her accomplishments as like a win for the team. Whereas Joel is not able to do that because he's not the star pupil of the marriage. Like, he's supposed to be the breadwinner. He's supposed to be in the 50s. Let's remember the time period. He's supposed to be the star of the show. He's supposed to be the leader of the pack. And then Midge is always doing everything right, acing every test. And he's not. He's just coming in second. He can't stand to come in second, which is why he shacks up with Penny Pan, who's always going to come in second,
mm-hmm.
right? Intellectually, everything else.
It's easy.
Career-wise, it's easy and it's safe. But what I like about Joel's and the portrayal is I see a guy who really wants to be able to celebrate. He doesn't see a blueprint for that. He wants to be the second fiddle, but he doesn't know how to like quell his ego enough. Like he gets butthurt about the fact that she's not swooning over him.
And, do you think he wants to be second fiddle though?
I think he wants to want to be. I think he really wants
to be Midge. Like, I think he married someone who represents like what he right. would like to be.
But yeah. he also wants to be with Midge. Right? So I think he wants he
wants to be having great bits with her like Randall.
Yeah, but you can't like grow that way. Like you can't just force yourself to grow that way. He has to go through enough pain and bullshit in his life to be able to figure out how to push his ego down enough. So to realize, like, oh, to be a real man, I got to make it not about me.
Mm-hmm.
I got to show up for this other human being. And he can't do that because, again, I think that in the 50s especially, there's not a blueprint for doing that. Every man that he's ever modeled his life on is, like, the main dude.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman is just showing up to be like, well, okay, you know, he's never.
Yeah, little trolls.
Yeah, little trolls.
You guys want to do some Twitter Q&A?
Tweet, tweet.
Tweet, tweet. Uh-huh.
See, she's back, baby.
Back.
She's back.
Baby.
Carrie, do you want Gilmore Girls to ever return?
No.
Okay.
Hard no.
Hard no.
I mean, if anything, I wish we could undo Year in the Life.
You would rather not have a Year in the Life than
that. I think so. You know, like, the more I sit on it, like, because mm-hmm. I think when we were watching it, it was so exciting. And now that it's over and I know what it was she wanted to do in the end, it hurts.
Yeah.
It's so mean.
I've not rewatched it since 2012.
Me neither. I can't believe that so many people guessed it and that we were all
I'm pregnant.
Wrong.
The most basic.
And think about how horrible it is that was her plan. No matter what season it ended, that was her plan. Like, it was all a big joke in the end. Like, haha, like, she's just going to end up a pregnant teen.
Or,
at least she's a pregnant 32-year-old now.
But she knew the line, and that's even worse, where it's like, it might not have been Rory. She just wanted to end it that way.
Oh, you think that it might have been Lane had the last line?
Lorelai and Suki.
Or like Lorelai pregnant.
Lorelai and Emily says, I'm pregnant.
It makes sense, though, like when you look at the pilot and like they're, oh, you know, she's just like her mother. Like,
right.
Like it seems like she wanted to make a harrowing point that no matter how hard you try, mm-hmm. history is doomed to repeat yourself. And all women grow up to be their mothers. Oh,
such a nihilistic. I hope Midge is breaking the cycle as far as that stuff goes.
It wouldn't be so bad.
Or maybe to become Rose?
Yeah, Rose Rules.
Rose.
I love Rules.
Did you guys ever watch Rose Rules on MTV?
I used to watch MTV's Rose Rules all the time.
It was just Maren Hinkle.
Do you really think Rose rules?
I love Rose,
No, she doesn't rule.
No?
Thank you, Kim. I'm so glad you're here. We've said that 20 times today.
Too many times for me to feel okay.
She's fine, but she's by far the least interesting of all the Maisels.
You're the least interesting of all the Maisels.
I know. I'm a piece of crap.
Hey, I hate when you do...
What?
It sucks making fun of you because you just immediately fold.
Oh,
I see.
It's diabolical.
It's diabolical.
You're right.
You're a manipulative person.
Am I? You're probably right. That's a good
point. Yeah, I am right. Great. I like it.
Great.
I'm staying here. Good.
Oh, man. Now, okay. Let's do some Twitter.
Found your game.
What? No, because I gave it to you, or did I? Speaking of things I need to correct, Victor CB says, I don't have a question, but Kevin called himself Pop in the last episode. It must be talked about.
I felt that same way. Victor, is it?
Yeah, Victor CB, although the avatar looks like a woman, so it's a woman named Victor, I guess.
Victor Victoria, I'm with you.
Wait, Kevin called himself Pop?
Papa. I called myself Papa.
Ew. Yeah, I'm with you guys.
As a listener, it's funny to see the moments that, like, sail by two of you and that, like, when you were just kind of, like, casually reciting Aladdin.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, really good point, Alice.
Yeah, that was our bad. That was our bad.
That's amazing.
Alice was vindicated by Twitter 20-fold the next day.
And then there was Kevin just said Papa, and you guys just breezed by in my car. Like, whoa.
Because Carrie slams the brakes, pulls over on the 134.
Terrible accident.
When asked, the driver said he like, just Papa. Said Papa.
And he's like, the police are like, yeah, we're all listening to.
It becomes a community
event.
We'll
try to get you out of this.
There's a candlelight vigil. My face is there. Becca says, already series wrap on Randall? Is this becoming a habit of the show where Midge has so much chemistry with the character that they write him out?
What? I wouldn't say it was like sexual chemistry. It was like comedy nerd chemistry.
Yeah.
I didn't think they had chemistry.
At all?
I think Cordry is like a chemistry factory maybe to a certain extent. Like he just is a good performer. So he has like...
I mean, those of us that watch Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip know what he's capable.
Is he the one whose brother was stuck in Afghanistan?
In the middle of Afghanistan! Oh my gosh.
Know.
A friend of mine reached out to me in jest and said, we should do a Studio 60 podcast.
Wow.
I'm like, I don't know if I could.
Please have me on it if you do.
I would love to.
We'll listen to it.
I mean.
It sounds pleasant.
Reliving Studio 60 is one of my favorite things.
Well, it is. And I think, I don't know how clear this is to people that don't work in this stuff, but Studio 60, a show that was one season, 22 episodes, the highest of pedigree, came on the same season as 30 Rock. And that was 12 years ago at this point, or 12 years ago. It is still such a punchline for people in comedy and writing. It's just like, oh, yeah, like the boys on Studio 60. Like, is that clear? Like, does the nation share our shared, like, derisiveness towards this show that was supposed to be about the greatest sketch writers that ever wrote a sketch and just sucked?
Well, I remember the time there was that tension of, like, which one's going to live? 30 Rock or Studio
30
60.
Rock
Everyone
or
felt,
Studio.
Oh, that poor, like, that, like, low-class 30 Rock doesn't stand a chance next to, like, this high-pedigree Studio 60.
And it got good reviews. Studio 60 was like...
And 30 Rock didn't.
It was funny. 30 Rock didn't. Breaking Bad didn't. The first year it was on. West Wing didn't for the pilot. Like, everyone's stupid until...
I feel really good because I started to watch Breaking Bad before it was at all a zeitgeist.
Mm-hmm.
I just was like,
When'd you hop on? Season 2?
I hopped on season 2. Mm-hmm. And actually, maybe season 1.
Mm.
Because I was in Brooklyn at the time, and...
And you were up for Skylar.
I was up for Skylar. Mm-hmm. Right. It was between me and another actor, Scott Patterson, actually.
Yeah,
who
he showed up to the table read,
He had the table read.
Yeah.
Well, Jesse was going to be while I shot at Scott Patterson.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jesse was...
Meth! Whatever, bitch.
Oh God, that's good.
Yo, Mr. White. Anywho,
Scott Patterson.
Let's get him on the show.
I probably could. Anyway.
Oh, he's the dad on Blackish. All right. Okay. And that's the end of that. I got in early. That's what I think about myself.
Way to go.
Wait, what was the question? Oh, it was Nate Cordry, and that brought us to Studio 60.
So much chemistry, yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, because
it
was only one episode. And Lenny Bruce isn't off the show yet.
Hey,
folks.
Girls.
He could be coming back in a big way.
I think I was so thirsty, though, for a love story. Like, I'm as much as I like to be a strong woman feminist, I'm also like, I like a love story when I watch TV.
That's not, and the thing is that a love story shouldn't be
exclusive.
You shouldn't feel shame about
thank
that.
Thank you. Thank
That's
you.
Not like a. Like, just because society has told us that a love story is frivolity because women like it, they've only told us that because women like it.
Yeah.
Just, you know,
things being high art because men like them and frivolity because women like them is no longer the narrative. So
thank you.
Hell yeah. Because of a little podcast called Gilmore Girls.
A little podcast?
Just kidding. Please don't attribute
that
to me.
But yeah, so funny. But I do feel like when this episode
you legitimized
came around,
all of it.
No, no, we didn't legitimize anything.
Also, I'd kind of written off Joel as the love interest because he stole material. And so like by the time I was waiting, okay, who's the love interest going to be? And then when this episode came around, I was like, oh, is it this guy?
Nope.
Yep. So I wouldn't say they were exploding with chemistry, but... Sure. I think it was filling a void.
Yeah.
That is empty again.
I guess I understand that too. She could have a little more flirties with somebody. It's kind of strange to me that she's so asexual with everyone else. Like, oh, are you hitting on me? Oh, I'm not here to do that. You know, like, really? Never flirting with anybody else ever? You know, she's so strangely unapproachable in that way.
She doesn't care about that.
Yeah, I guess.
And that's the thing.
I've never met that person, though.
What, the person who doesn't care about flirting?
Yeah, who just is
I
so
think you're
dynamic.
You're looking at him, buddy. I'm just kidding.
I believe it to not be true.
Okay. Miranda says, so the Hitler bit that they did at the party, talking about the improv / sketch, wouldn't that have been a case of too soon?
I was thinking that, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think, but I was thinking about it.
Me, too. I think I'm going to agree with what you have to say.
Is it going to? Thanks.
Okay, moving on.
I think the president, no, I'm just kidding. I think it would be the equivalent of someone maybe like 5 or 6 years ago making a 9/11 joke.
Yeah.
Is that the same? Honestly, the Holocaust was insanely much worse, much, much worse. But in terms of like national tragedy that affected thousands of people.
Like, I do think she could do it because she was at a party of young people and it didn't seem like a lot of Jews. Like, she never could have pulled that off at her wedding.
No, but I think it's also. I think it is tantamount.
Who gets to toast her own wedding?
I think it's topical in that
sure,
context.
Yeah. Sure.
I think it would be seen as like, let's make a joke about the thing that's like the worst thing, and we're doing. I mean, it's really light. Like, it was just like, this is Hitler. I mean,
yeah,
it wasn't
like
great.
They were talking about ovens or something.
I guess,
like horrific.
I feel like they do the Holocaust jokes a lot in this show, and they do it better earlier on. Like, the jokes that the dad makes and stuff like that, like, and that she says, like, he was a DACA, throw him a bone,
sure,
whatever,
sure, sure,
you know,
sure.
Like, those jokes are much better,
mm-hmm.
you know, than this stupid Hitler shit. And also, is this a Gentile?
Randall?
Yeah.
Ooh,
Randall
that,
seems
that
like
a
Gentile. That seems like,
I guess
right,
I just assumed he was Jewish, but I guess there was no reason to.
No.
Something in his bit that made me think he was Jewish, but I maybe there wasn't.
Yeah.
Like, non-Jews can talk about deli.
That's
anytime
true.
They want. It's
yeah,
America.
We're allowed.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that.
I might go to the deli after this.
I might get a salami or two.
This is hard to hear.
I might get
I never should have destigmatized deli.
There was that line, too, when he was leaving where he goes to Midge, where he just turns to Midge and says,
see you again. And don't be funny without me.
That was like a little
menacing.
Yeah, like when rewatching, I was like, oh, this is not quite. I mean, but he's not menacing. He's not an evil guy.
Menacing.
As we're
like, please don't be funny without me.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we also glazed over this.
If somebody said that to me in the real world, if I was being funny for like as long as she was being funny, and then a guy came out, don't be funny without me, I'd be like, okay. You know, I'd be like, well, we're not going to work together now.
Yeah.
Speaking of funny, we got the fortune teller lady back.
If the secretary were just out of the picture, Joel would come back.
You want her out of the picture? I have cousins. They have skills.
I'm sorry?
Nothing.
You didn't like that?
I don't like the fortune teller bit.
Nah?
I don't like it.
It seems like they're trying to give Rose a thing, but it doesn't seem to influence any other part of her life.
That's right.
Like, if you saw her take its advice, like, she never seems to give Midge that tonic. Like, if you saw it affect her day-to-day life, maybe I'd get why it was there. But
she put it under her pillow.
Oh, she did?
Yeah, and Midge found it later.
Oh, I missed
or
that.
Maybe it's next week. But she finds it, and she's like, ugh, what is this?
I don't remember
sorry,
that
sorry, I goofed.
What is that? We called it a Gilmore goof. Now we're calling it a Maisel mistake.
I like it.
Right?
Yeah.
Ursula Maisel, I guess.
A Maisel oops.
Oh, Alex said, what is your Bell Lab, the thing that you talked about nonstop, the achievement you may have embarrassingly stalked. If you got it, did you play it as cool as Abe?
It's weird. It's Bell Labs.
Oh, it's still Bell Labs. It's literally Bell Labs.
It's literally Bell Labs for me. Mm-hmm.
This season on Speechless, you know, I'm pretty well known for loving the television program The Bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
And I obsessively talked about getting Bachelor Nick Vile on the show.
Did you get him?
I did. And he came to set, and I talked to him about The Bachelor for, like, a solid half hour.
Wow.
And I glowed for, like, a week.
Did you play it cool?
No.
Okay.
Well, so I went up, I couldn't go talk to him without a coworker, and I was like, hey, so, like, I've seen the show a couple times, and my coworker just started laughing, so mm-hmm. that immediately... Yeah.
Undermined your cred.
And but I tried to play it cool, and it increasingly got so intense that he was like, oh, so you're like a really big fan of the show.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And then I got to tell him that I thought that he got an unfair edit in his season and that Josh Murray was the real villain, and he took my hand and said, thank you.
Wow.
And that meant a lot.
Oh my God.
Freak out.
And then also while I was talking to him, someone from set came over and said, hey, Nick, can I borrow you for a second? And took him away, which is such an iconic Bachelor thing to happen to you.
Were they kidding?
No, it was just like a sincere, it's like someone needed him.
They
moment.
Said, hey, Nick, can I borrow you for a second, though?
Yes.
Whoa, because so, that's like, the phrase.
So, you know, so I guess my Bell Labs is just The Bachelor in general. And, like the fact that I talked about it. It was funny, too, because like it was announced on Deadline and stuff, and all the comments were like, oh, God, I can't believe ABC is forcing the show to do this. It's like, nope, it was all. For me, because I
did you comment that
so much?
Oh my God, that's incredible!
Did you?
I love
did
that.
You? You should comment.
I
that
haven't
on
trolled anyone. No.
Oh wow. But,
yeah, so I guess Nick Vile is kind of my Bell Labs.
That was your Bell Labs, and
yeah,
and you were not as cool as Abel.
I was not cool at all.
Yeah,
and they let me go to his audition, like cause mm-hmm. in case he didn't get the part, so I could still meet him.
Oh, that, this is so nice. So, what a nice place you
yeah,
work.
It was like. Very much like my like a make a wish thing for me, but I'm fine.
Minus the you're totally okay.
But I was like so red faced at his audition, and then I weirdly felt like I had to pretend I'd never met him before when sure. I met him again, and that was like I was weird in every way you could be weird about it.
Aww.
But it was still fun.
But it sounds like it worked out okay.
Yeah, you know he's on the show. Rave reviews.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't even talk about the namesake of the episode, which is. The final shot, apropos of nothing and no build-up.
Oh, yeah.
They cut back to that record store. And
I love...
Just, yeah, it's a really cool, long overhead shot that's just, like, slowly dollying in or whatever the...
Oh, it's dollying out,
Or the... Well, if it's going down... Well, there's no dolly. I guess it's on a crane. Who cares? It's going in on the tape recorder. That's they don't they're saying I don't know who this is, so we're gonna call her Mrs. X at the Gaslight. Mm. And they're making 100 they said we're gonna dub 100 of these and see where it goes. They're trying to make her the next Damn Daniel and go viral in the '50s.
Damn Daniel.
Here's a question I wanted to ask you guys.
Yes.
When you listen to her original stand up,
mm-hmm.
do you laugh?
No.
Like, I have a bit of a disconnect. Like, when they're all laughing, like, oh, my God, like, this is amazing.
She's so real. It's like she's having a breakdown.
It, actually, I get a little Studio 60, like, hives of, like, people telling me something's funny and not feeling it.
Yeah.
I think that was my same problem with her, like, party stuff, too. That everyone's, like gathered around, like, ha,
but, like,
ha, ha.
Neither is, like, Lenny Bruce or anything. No, nobody is. I'm not, like, the show itself is funny.
You don't think Lenny Bruce is funny? You're saying in the show.
In the show.
Oh, okay.
Like, none of it is.
Yeah.
Because the only things I ever laugh at are the jokes that she listens to on tape that are, like, from real performances. Yeah.
Or Abe. Or you're saying from the comedy stuff.
Like, yeah, from the comedy
stuff. Gotcha, gotcha, gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, I just take that with a grain of salt. You know, it's really hard to write funny stand-up on a show.
Yeah.
Unless you're doing, like, literally Seinfeld.
But I think it works when you see it. Is the
it
weird
works
thing,
when you see it.
But you're
for
right.
Me, it
listening
does.
To it this time, it wasn't like, oh my gosh,
yeah,
you know, it worked when you had the context of her having a breakdown,
right.
and her clothes are all
like,
wet.
I loved
and the way
it
she's...
as a scene,
mm-hmm.
but like, yeah, I didn't feel like it stood alone as amazing comedy.
Yeah.
Well, I guess kind of like, as a comedian, it's like I'm watching the
here
show.
We go.
From the comedian's perspective,
you're gonna do like, sound effects.
So in my life. Like, I'm going along writing jokes, writing material, and it occurs to me that it's funny, and then I say it on stage aloud, and it's like, I think it's funny. So the audience, if they laugh at it, that's great. But if I listen back later to my own material, I don't think it's funny. I'm not, like,
laughing at it out loud because it's not surprising because I thought of it. So I feel like you're watching this show from the perspective of that.
Oh, yeah. You're like, so we're so inured to it that.
Yeah. I mean, we see her come up with this stuff in a way. We know everything that it's going to be. We know where it all came from. And we're like kind of delighted at her twist. But it's like the audience isn't following her along.
Yeah. I can see in a vacuum someone shows up and says that stuff. It's funny.
Maybe. I think that's part of the reason the party stuff doesn't work for me too. Because at the party, it's not like, Joel and I, blah, blah, blah. Even though she told the story about Mike McClanahan, Rue McClanahan or whatever his name was. But she's doing such prepared material, whereas all this stuff on stage is like, this is what happened to me today, and here's the lemonade I'm making out of these lemons. But the party stuff is all just like, and what's the deal with the first apartment you've ever had? What's the... It's like so curated in a way that the stage stuff isn't. So when she does, it's like... That's part of why it feels wrong, too, because it's almost like it would be like a comedian, like, totally changing their style.
Right.
Like if Mike Birbiglia did one-liners instead of long storytelling or something, it'd be like, what? What are you doing?
Right.
Well, I think we should get into our final thoughts. The way this works, Carrie, as you know, we give things mazeltovs or mazeltoves, depending on your flav, or a schlemazel. We'll give schlemazels to the things we don't so much like about the episode, and a mazeltov or tove to the things we do like and enjoy about the episode. We'll start with you, Alice.
Okay. So I'm going to give a yet another mazeltov to the phenomenal Susie and everything she does, and just to the writing of the character in this episode. I like what they where they went with her and how they gave her this moment, and it feels really shiny. I'm going to give another mazeltov to Joel because I feel like he's going to get a lot of schlemazels. I really love this episode. I think in general it's like really well written and really well paced, and the moments are real. The characters' reactions seem real to me. Let's see. If I had to give anything, I think a schlemazel would be to that idea of the two of those – her and what's his name, Daryl or whatever,
Randall. Not his name is Randall.
Midge and Randall having met for the first time in a bit is ridiculous to me, and
it's completely... kind of how we met.
Okay, so that'll be my those are my observations.
It's not all how we met. Yeah, Carrie, what are your schlemazels and mazeltovs?
My mazeltovs we mostly talked about because I wrote them down.
Yeah. She wrote them down.
My God.
This is great.
My God. Aren't we
like
lucky?
Like Midge's notebook.
She is. Yeah. You are the Midge of this podcast.
And I'm the Joel and the Astrid and whatever bad character there is.
And I'm the Tony.
And you're the Tony. Who's Tony?
Tony Shalhoub.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
You're Abe.
I'm Abe.
Yeah, my mazeltovs were Noah and Astrid, like their whole vibe, like I felt
very
so
good. Yeah,
I actually experience this sometimes, not my family, but extended extended sections of my family, like that are more seriously Jewish. Like when a Jew marries in, it feels a lot more natural. When a non-Jew marries in, they feel a little more on edge. Like that felt
totally
so real to me. And I love Noah's relationship with Midge. Then I have my schlemazel is also, I think, a Palladinoism.
Ooh,
because
we didn't do
here
those.
We go.
Yeah.
Which is.
Or correction section.
Large groups of women who seem to know that they're extras in something. Like, this seems like a uniquely Amy Sherman. I guess people in general, but especially women. Like she seems to think that women are smart or they're simple. And I think I actually think she should watch The Bachelor to see that. You can be, like, not smart but also complex.
Yeah.
That's such a good point.
That's incredible.
But, like the girls that she works with, they're like, I'm the normal one, and I'm the one who's, like, boy crazy. Like, I'm the black one. Like, it's so striking to me that her work, like, more than any other that I can think of, ensemble members seem to know they're ensemble members.
Yeah.
And that bugs me.
That's true.
Like, and even I was thinking about other shows.
When they go home, they put themselves into a closet and go into stasis.
That's how I felt about, like, the Life and Death Brigade between Gilmore Girls and Year in Life. They were in stasis. Absolutely.
Yeah.
For instance, Gunther on Friends, who obviously he's not, like, a well-developed character, but he's, like, you don't have a feeling that his entire life revolves around them, that he doesn't exist.
So, like, wooden and cardboard and one-dimensional. But,
like the way that everyone is just like gathered around her at the party, like
kills
me. Like that drove me crazy because you want to see someone going, hey, like Midge has been talking for a while. Like
that moment when the guy goes,
What about the snacks or whatever?
Oh, yeah. They had the line about the... Well, were you talking about the possibly
guy who interrupts?
Gay character? Oh, yeah. Where's the onion dip?
The onion dip, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And then everybody goes, shush.
So much unison reaction.
Horrendously. Yeah. I mean, I was literally horrified by this.
It was a Greek chorus.
Midge goes,
anyhow.
Ugh, yeah. Fuck you. And then Laser later goes up to him and is like, the onion dip. Like, can you believe that you did that? And he's like, thank you for touching me. Yeah. Such bullshit. I wanted to throw out a window.
A moment in that scene that I found really chilling that kind of sailed by was like when she says, he asked me to prom, and everyone goes, ooh. Like, why all of that about prom? Like, she talked about wanting to, like, have sex with him, and, like my mom said, your virtue's a garden, and you can forget it. Like, and prom is the thing that makes them lose their shit. Like, that's when I was like, oh, my God, they're robots. They're reacting on cue.
Chilling.
It's like that, like, the SNL commercial for, like, the Tostitos.
Oh, yeah, hungry guys.
Yeah, yeah. When she realizes they're all just robots. Like, I had that moment about that group.
Totally.
So anyway.
My hungry guys.
I know I come on here to give notes to Amy Sherman-Palladino.
That's what we all do.
Yeah. What she wants from me, a low-level writer with little experience.
Hey, but like, if you were a man, you wouldn't.
Show.
If you were a man, you wouldn't qualify.
That's true.
No, I wouldn't, too.
If I were a man who wasn't Kevin.
A piece of shit that should be dead. Yeah, not a real man. You're right.
Like, I think she's getting a little better. Like, I think Astrid could have very easily been a simpleton, but wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, yeah, flesh out those supporting people.
Yeah.
Like, and even, you don't have to give them a ton, but make it feel like they exist in a world outside of midges.
It's almost as if they're looking to expand. She literally, it's chilling, right?
Yeah.
She said it.
Like, they all, like, everyone, it reminded me of, like, Madame Louise, and even, I know these weren't under her tenure, but Olivia and whatever the other one was named.
Louise. It was Olivia and Louise again?
Essentially, yeah. Like, it just seems like they're all these, like, I say this, and then I say this, and I feel nervous for these women.
Right, very proppy.
Oh, yeah. Interesting, yeah.
I feel nervous.
That's such a good way of putting
it.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Oh, boy.
It's so Westworldy.
Yeah.
It's like, totally.
That's what Amy Sherman should be writing the Westworld character dialogue.
Doesn't look like anything to me.
Boyfriend, does this look like anything to you?
Boyfriend! Oh, my gosh. Well, I will give Maisel Tobbs to Alex Borstein, Tony Shalhoub, as per usual. I'll give them. I share with you in like Maisel Tobbs to Astrid and Noah, and those actors I felt like were really good. Shlemazel to Joel. I'm just going person by person now.
It's your burn book.
Yeah. No. And huge Maisel Tobbs to that the boundary setting. Heart to heart, ride or die scene with Susie and Midge,
mm-hmm.
And then Schlemazel to, you know what? I'm gonna give no Schlemazel.
Wow. No. Well, you gave a Schlemazel to Joel.
Schlemazel to Joel. But he kind of defaults to a Schlemazel.
Did you remember getting hit with? You watched it three times. A joke that was just a Mean Girls joke. It was from Mean Girls. Like I remember seeing something and being like, that is a Mean Girls moment.
Yeah, when Midge says, Joel, stop trying to make fetch happen. She says
Kevin.
That. She says that.
I don't remember.
Rewind
there is
it.
A moment in the show where it's like where somebody does something and I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's like it was a direct copy of a scene from Mean Girls.
Oh, you know what? I want to give a Schlemazel to the fact that they touch upon a person that might be gay in the show, but they don't do anything with it.
Yeah.
So it kind of exists as tokenism rather than exploring it at all with
Susie. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They do that with the party guests, too, mm-hmm, talking about, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my Schlemazel.
Yeah, good Schlemazel.
Good Schlemazel.
Good Schlemazel.
Good Schlemazel.
What if that was your dog's name?
Schlemazel? It is. It's not. I don't have a dog.
My dog's named Dexter.
Is that true? My sister's dog's name is Dexter.
It's a good dog name.
Yeah,
it's
great.
I bet he's a good boy.
My sister's name is Dog.
Whoa.
My dog used to live in Paris.
Okay.
Kay! Come on.
Kay!
Carrie, thank you so much for joining us
Thanks
on the
for
show.
Having me.
Having
fun.
Such a delightful time. So fun. Where can people find you? What do you have to plug?
Watch Speechless. Here's the thing. I'm on Twitter at Carrie Rosen. I never tweet though.
DM?
I DM. I'd like more followers, but I can't promise anything back.
Well, that's kinda good though. You're not gonna pollute my timeline.
It's okay.
Yeah,
Set the boundaries.
Yeah.
you know.
Follow for follow.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you should tweet something like, if this gets 10 retweets, I'll tweet again. Like, just make it a very low stakes game. If this gets 5 retweets, I'll at reply somebody.
Mm.
Alice, what do you have to plug?
So March 1st, 2, 3, I'll be at the Tempe Improv. And I'm doing a fundraiser in, let's see, the 23rd, I'll be, oh no, the 24th of February, I'll be in Columbus, Ohio. So if you're in the Columbus area, please come out to the fundraiser for this bulldog rescue that I forgot the name of, that I'll be raising money for at a black tie charity event.
Ooh.
That's right, baby. Black tie. You can find me on Twitter at Alice Wetterland and Instagram at Alice Wetterland. I'm myself. I'm just truly myself in both
arenas. Your most authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, your best life now. You can find me at Kevin T. Porter everywhere. And you can listen to Good Christian Fun, my other podcast. That comes out every Wednesday. We should have you on. We can talk about your Judaism.
Yeah, I have nothing to say but like about Christianity or really Judaism. And I didn't know what a mezuzah was, but I'd be delighted to.
We'll do an hour and a half about mezuzahs and the origin story.
I wonder if Judy Dench catchphrases that she calls Judaisms.
Probably. Mm,
I think Judy Davis does for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay. Okay. Oh, and listen to Treks in the City. Did you say that?
I didn't say it, but thank you so much for plugging. You're I have another welcome. Podcast about Star Trek and my life called Treks in the City.
Yeah. Alice, you did a great job today.
Thank you so much, guys. I'm
for
sorry.
For being
I'm
under
sick.
The weather.
Alice, feel better.
Thank you. I'm going to go home and rest.
Everyone tweet Alice feel better, even though hopefully by the time
let's
this comes
God,
out.
I hope let's so. Get this trending.
Yeah, guys. Hashtag Alice's last wish.
Oh, yeah. Get better wishes.
Get better wishes. Carrie, thanks for joining us.
Carrie, thank you.
Thank
we'll
you,
We'll see
guys.
You next week on the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goys. Let's go out with the song they go out with in this episode, which
fan
is
fave.
Our Lips Are Sealed by the Go-Go's.
A period song.
Yep. Super accurate. No, I love it. I love that they don't period accuracy. Oh.
Daniel needs an opportunity to talk about, you know, what music he likes.
Do you think Daniel likes music?
I'm starting to sense maybe yes.
What music do you think he's into?
Oh, do you think
know,
he
like
DJs?
The this, that.
The Strokes, the Hives, the Squirrel Nut Zippers.
I wonder if he DJs.
Oh, I want
to
go see
imagine?
A Daniel Palladino
DJ. I bet like every night they're at their house and he just DJs.
Oh, Jesus.
Their dinner.
We'll see you next week. Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.